This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
From Joy 94.9, this is Saturday Magazine.
Mac is on leave and my co-host for this week is Neil Farrow, a former Corporate Affairs Director for the Foundation for Young Australians, a former Labor candidate for the state seat of Paran, and the former co-convener of the national organisation Rainbow Labor. Neil now works as a consultant and he'll tell us all about that in a few minutes. Good morning to you, Neil.
Good morning, Tess. How are you?
Very well, thank you. Now, what a week we've had. We just saw Dean Smith's marriage equality bill pass through the Senate. The Victorian government's voluntary assisted dying bill turned into law. Labor hold onto power in the Queensland election, state election last weekend. And of course, yesterday, we remembered all those people who lost their lives to HIV and AIDS, World AIDS Day. Neil.
Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm very well. Slightly jet-lagged, but I did still get a gym session in this morning before flying into the studio, so I can't complain about that.
That's what happens when you're 18 years old, you see.
Oh, I think I'm almost double that now. It's getting...
Really?
I'm 34 very soon.
Hardly. So we have kids that age at home.
Not quite kids yet for me. Maybe a dog next year. I think that's the first step.
A dog. My partner's been after a dog for a long time, but of course I won't allow a dog in the house.
I think I've had the pressure too from my partner now for quite a while, and I think I've finally given in. I suspect we might be getting a greyhound.
Hang on. Let's just go back a little bit. What was that P word that you used?
It was a partner word. We've been together almost 12 months now, actually.
I didn't know that.
A little boy from Manchester. Well, he's not so little and he's probably taller than I am, but living together down in St Kilda.
Well, you've kept that pretty hidden.
Oh, I guess it's now all over the radio, so it's not so hidden anymore.
Well, good morning, Mr. Manchester, whatever your name may be.
Absolutely. His name's Chris, and I think he had a big night out last night in London. He's just had his father's been remarried, so he's over in the UK at the moment.
There you go. So, Neil, we want to talk a bit more in detail about some of your experiences and some of the work that you've done, but I'm really keen to have a chat with you about your stand in state politics and what that felt like. What was it like to be a candidate?
Look, it's probably one of the best and worst experiences you can go through simultaneously. It's definitely something I really enjoyed. And look, for anyone who's interested in politics or even disappointed with the way politics is heading at state or federal level in Australia at the moment, the one thing I'd say is, you know, put your hand up, get involved, join a political party, campaign, vote, have the experience and enjoy the journey. But definitely be prepared for a roller coaster of rides along the way. It's definitely not something for the faint-hearted.
So you're a Labor candidate?
I was. Labor candidate for Pran in 2014.
And if I recall correctly, you were inching ahead, then inching behind, then inching ahead, then inching behind, and then you finally didn't get over the line.
Correct. So I actually sat in the caucus meeting of the Labor Party where we elected the Premier, because obviously caucus elects the Premier in Victoria, because at that particular stage of counting, I was
ahead
in the votes.
There you go.
And then I finished a week or two later behind by, I think, 31 votes.
And then they shut the door on you and you're never allowed back in caucus again.
Never allowed back in caucus again.
What was it like to be in caucus?
It was pretty amazing to actually formally elect the Premier of Victoria. So for those of you who aren't aware, the process is whenever government is resumed or whenever government kicks off, all of the caucus actually gets together and votes in the leader and the deputy leader of the party. So Daniel Andrews doesn't become Premier until caucus elects him formally after the election.
And this happens on all sides of politics, or is this just a Labor convention?
It happens on both sides of politics. In Australia, we're a representative democracy, so we elect our local MP, and then our local MP will elect the leader of the political party. Tradition and convention has it that the leader of the party before the election remains the leader of the party after the election, but there is still a process and formality of electing them, and it was quite cool to be involved in that last time round.
I imagine it would be. And then all of a sudden you just got closed out.
That's it. The recount took a couple of weeks, and then it was kind of all over Red Rover, and you're off to your next adventure and trying something different. So
Well, we'll come back to your next adventures a little later. But tell us a bit more about what it felt like to constantly see people talking about you and seeing there being a discussion and a debate about, you know, you, your values, your policies, your history, your background, and really not having a lot of control over what people say about you. What does that feel like?
It's quite an interesting process politically around what people say and do and you know, how people perceive you in the media and what you have or haven't done. I think one of the most hilarious instances I had across the campaign is the Australian Christian Lobby, our dear friends Lyle and Kyle or whatever his name is and co, decided they'd launch a little campaign against me locally in Prahran because of my stance, one, around the exclusion zone around family planning clinics.
They called you something, didn't they?
I did. I got the great title. I got 5,500 letters calling me a filthy homosexual baby killer.
5,000 letters.
Over 5,000 letters calling me a filthy homosexual
baby killer.
Oh, that
must have been a campaign.
It was a campaign. Obviously, I was openly gay and also openly pro-choice. And so that kind of led to
So you're an FHBK.
I think if anybody's got a t-shirt brand out there, you could hashtag that and make a little bit of money.
A bit like the
FCUK.
Yes. Yes.
French Connection, United Kingdom.
Correct. FHBK. That could be a lot of fun, couldn't it?
That was definitely one of the most interesting parts about the campaign. I think just building general awareness, interest in the community, but I did really enjoy it. You know, you fall into a routine. Every morning I'd get up, go to the gym. I'd be at the train stations by about 7:15, 7:30, hand out for an hour and a half. Usually go home, have breakfast, community groups, usually pensioner groups during the day, school groups in the afternoon, phone
calls. What does it feel like putting yourself out like that? You know, please vote for me.
I think after 10 months of not drawing an income and standing at train stations in all sorts of weather, it was definitely an interesting experience. But I would really say to anyone who's listening or interested in politics, you know, you've got to have your name in the game to do anything. And if you really want to change and make the world a better place, it's definitely worth stepping up. Even if it's not to my favourite political party, I'd encourage anyone to get involved.
If you've just tuned in and you're wondering who Neil is, Neil is Neil Farrow, who formerly worked for the Foundation for Young Australians and was a former Labor candidate for the state seat of Prahran. And he's just been talking to us about his experience. So would you do it again?
Look, I would definitely do it again, despite everything that happened across the journey. I think it is a tremendous opportunity.
You didn't come out feeling scarred.
Oh, look, I did flee to New York for a year after the election, so I did have a little bit of a break, which I definitely think is well needed. But, you know, you want to change the world, you've got to be part of it, and stepping up and giving it another shot or encouraging others to give it another shot is part of that as well. And, you know, I entered politics because I wanted to change the world. I didn't want to become a politician, so whatever I can keep doing that in whatever way that is, I'll kick on and get involved.
And why politics? Why do you think that you can create change through politics and not through some other means? Advocacy, for example.
Oh, look, I think you can definitely create change through other means, and it sort of names and different stages and different parts of your life and where you've got strengths and opportunities. For me, I'd been co-chair of Rainbow Labor nationally for probably about 5 or 6 years before I ran for Prahran, and so that showed me the opportunity of where having a concerted effort and campaigning and advocating for activities can cause change. And I definitely think that my pre-selection for Prahran and obviously working with people like our Minister for Equality and Premier who are passionate around LGBTI issues has definitely helped shift the dial for us in Victoria.
I think that's absolutely right. And Martin Foley, who's the Minister for Equality and my local member, as it turns out, has been a regular on our show, often providing us with updates on, you know, policy announcements or new programs or funding commitments. And he's been fantastic, actually.
And I think Victoria is actually the envy of Australia at the moment, particularly in LGBTI areas. I get to travel quite a bit for work internationally and nationally. And so many states and territories are looking to Victoria for leadership in the LGBTI space around how we've done activities, how we've funded things, whether it be a commissioner or a minister for equality. Mm. And I really think the great part about that is knowing Daniel and Martin very well. Their gut reaction is always to be pro-LGBTI. So, you know, it's very unusual to find a genuine ally whose instinct reaction is to support the community. And I think that's great across both of them.
Neil, I actually have a couple of questions for you. One of our regular listeners and stars, Melina Smith, has actually written in and wants to know whether you will ever get married if we have marriage equality legislation in Australia.
Look, it's something I've fought for a very long time. I'm not actually sure whether I would get married, but I definitely have a celebration. I think part of me would like that choice, though. So, you know, ultimately that's a decision between me and my partner and our families. But having that choice
you
is
mean
tremendously
Chris.
Important. I mean, Chris, yeah.
So, he's Chris, if you're listening, send us a message. Let us know what you think.
I think my mum's texted me and said that I'm talking too quickly. So that's the only message I've had via mobile phone while I've been on radio. So she's listening in Batemans Bay, New South Wales, so a long way from here.
While we're chatting about Melina Smith, though, Melina Smith, you do owe us a visit. We actually have a mug here for you, the Margaret Court lesbian tennis mug, which you're required to come and collect. And Macca was very disappointed last week that you didn't appear for that. So perhaps wait till Macca's back, which won't be next week, but the week after that. So we are going to speak with Alex Greenwich, of course, in a few minutes' time. But before we do get Alex on, I'm interested in having a chat with you about marriage equality and what are some of your thoughts about this?
Look, I think there was a very important reflection made this week by Magda Skibanski and Penny Wong. So I think Magda tweeted out that it's been a very long day in Parliament. This is when the bill passed the Senate earlier this week. And Penny Wong replied, it's been a very long decade. And I think that it's really important to recognise that this has been a fight that's been going for a very long time. And I and others have stood on the shoulders of elders. You know, I've been involved in this for almost 10 years now, just around marriage equality and LGBTI advocacy through Rainbow Labor. But even before that, you know, there were 20 years of advocates before me who were fighting for the rights that got me to the position where I could then consider advocating going forward. So,
Neil, I've been doing this this show now for about 2.5 years, and I honestly can't think of a single show where we haven't talked about marriage equality and unpacked it and unpicked it and spoken to our, you know, various guests, people who've authored bits of legislation or participated in Senate inquiries or done some advocacy work. It is getting a little bit tiring. Like, you know, we just want it done now. We want to move on to the next thing, which of course is going to be to fight for the ability to be who we are.
And I think my big shout out to everyone who's been involved in marriage equality is please remember the next battle. You know, our trans and intersex community is still heavily discriminated against internationally. Gays are routinely killed in a number of countries. I do some work for an international HIV organisation who works in 62 of the poorest countries on the planet, where access to HIV medication and criminality and the risk of being put to death all kind of come together. I still think there's big gaps in philanthropy, and you know, I'm tired of talking about marriage equality and I want it over and done with. But for everyone who's been part of the journey, you know, don't stop now. We have to keep fighting and progressing in other fronts as well. And I think it's really important that, you know, day one of marriage equality, we have I'm not allowed to swear on air, but, you know, an amazing celebration. And then the following day we kind of pull ourselves together and go, okay, you know, what's next? And progress takes time. You know, we've got a lot of reforms and in the year I lived in New York, a lot of Americans were like, well, you know, Australia still hasn't got marriage equality. And it's like, well, we actually have a whole heap more rights, employment protection, anti-discrimination, things like that. And we've got to keep fighting for those because, as we can see, and we're talking about it later in the show, there's potential for this religious protections, quote, unquote, to actually wind back a whole heap of protections that we currently have enshrined.
Well, that's my view about this, and I think that it's been clouded under this sort of idea of religious freedom, which, you know, suggests that actually we want to look after people's ability to express and believe in what they believe in. But to me, it feels a little bit like a pseudonym for really an attempt to actually try to do away with state-based anti-discrimination legislation.
Well, I think it's trying to undermine some state-based anti-discrimination legislation, and it's also misconstruing what the term freedom is. So freedom is my choice to do what I want, not to impose my views on others. So the perfect example of this is if I turn around and go, you know, Tass, I'm on a diet, I can't then turn around to you and say, well, you can't eat donuts. You know, it's my choice to be on a diet, not yours, and I can't impose those views on you. And so we've got to be very cautious cautious with the religious freedom argument and actually call it out for what it is, which is, you know, you can do whatever you want in your own home.
Well, let's just unpack that a bit more. So if you are inviting somebody around to your home for dinner and they're a great friend of yours, you're having a dinner party with a number of guests and one of them happens to be vegetarian, how do you cater for their needs?
Look, I've got mates of mine who are vegetarian and vegan and you know, it's...
Celiac and no sugar and the rest of it. Yeah, we've all got them.
And I try to eat pretty healthy myself. So it depends on my mood. Sometimes I'll cook them another dish. Sometimes I'll sort of supplement what I'm cooking. But the interesting side about it is I never force feed them meat. And this is this religious freedom argument. Is it's like, you know, I eat meat, you don't eat meat, but I'm going to shove meat down your mouth, which is this kind of
distortion. And that's actually the key to it, isn't it? It's actually about saying, you know, you can choose to eat what you want to eat, but you don't have to eat what I'm forcing you or what I'm presenting for you to eat.
Correct. Mm. And I think we've got to be very vigilant in this space. Religious freedom is protected in our constitution. We were talking about it earlier. So this whole...
Yes, I had no idea about this. So
this whole
pull it out.
Yeah,
pull it out, Neil.
Section 116 of our constitution actually says, and here I'm quoting, it precludes the Commonwealth of Australia from making laws for establishing any religion, imposing any religious observances, or prohibiting the free exercise of any religion. So we already have a constitutional protection.
So why do we need legislation that reinforces that?
I think this is the right-wing conservatives off on another random tangent, and possibly to try and undermine anti-discrimination laws or cloud the issue even further. Yeah,
that's exactly my view. I think it's about creating confusion and I think it's about trying to undermine existing legislation that exists in the states. Now, what I don't and what I'm not entirely across is whether there's harmony across all the different states and whether their anti-discrimination legislation is actually aligned or... Can I be discriminated just a little bit less in another state and a little bit more in another state?
Look, I think some of the landscape maps across Australia show still that...
landscape
Western
maps.
Australia,
isn't that lovely?
I was going to say, I think Western Australia still lags behind on a couple of pieces in LGBTI rights area. And I think Queensland is rapidly catching up but was previously behind. So I'm not sure it's uniform, but I definitely know the protections are higher. I suppose the other point of this religious freedom argument, which the right-wing is having great difficulty navigating, is if you give religious freedom to one religion, then therefore you have to give it to all religions. But they seem to want to apply it selectively as well. So, you know, only some religions deserve religious protections, but not others, which is another interesting argument for a conservative right-wing government that we have federally.
And that's actually very interesting because the other religions that we're often talking about, and we should name it, I think we should name it, is really Islam. There's a bit of anti-Islam happening in our community at the moment. And partly it's about, you know, freedoms, but it's largely about saying, really, we don't trust that religious framework and we don't want those values and those frameworks imposing upon our society.
And that's calling out exactly what it is. You know, the conservatives don't want...
I'm quite happy to do that at this point in my life.
Don't want those particular religious values imposed, but they're happy to impose their own. And the other side of it, which we forget about, is there's religions like the Quakers that are 100% happy with gay people and gay marriage and everything else. So, you know, their religious freedom and their religious views, of course all the gays can get married. So, you know, why aren't we applying that same optics for a religion that's very pro-LGBTI versus others that perhaps aren't are anti?
Neil, before we wind up for a short break, I want to ask you this question. Have you in your own personal network experienced anybody who has voted no in the marriage equality survey? And secondly, if so, how did you feel about that?
I don't actually know anyone who's admitted voting no. They may have voted no without telling me about it. Obviously, my background's pretty pro-yes on this issue. Look, I didn't support the plebiscite. I didn't support the survey, yes, but of course. Still voted yes and encouraged. And, you know, my mum's family's Italian, Roman Catholic. Some of them are regional New South Wales. You know, I've had to have the tough discussions with them over voting yes. But I don't know anyone who's voted no in my immediate world, which is probably a good thing.
Saturday Magazine on Joy 94.9, proudly sponsored by Virgin Australia. Visit virginaustralia.com.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.